Welcome to Disrupt Disruption, a series of intimate interviews with global thought leaders and practitioners operating at the intersection of business, leadership, and technology. We're discussing all things innovation and disruption and how to not only survive but thrive in these times of exponentially accelerating change. Trusted by CEOs, founders, and leaders globally for the latest take on business models, methods, culture, and leadership, we cut to the chase, debunk the hype, and get real. You're in great company. I'm your host, Pascal Finette, co-founder of Be Radical. Hey, everybody, this is Pascal. We are back with another episode of Disrupt Disruption. I am stoked, and I use this word in all earnest, to talk with Riaz Shah. He's a partner, the global learning leader at EY, has been with the firm for a long time. He founded and created in his role there the Tech MBA, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that is. The Tech University, two incredible programs which have been rolled out globally throughout EY. He also created the One Degree Academy, a private chartered school in the United Kingdom, doing really innovative work in the space of learning and reskilling and upskilling and getting people ready for the future. And in many, many ways, Riaz is the best living example I know of someone who's doing disruption on a daily basis, particularly in the field of learning. And I'm stoked to have you here, Riaz.
It's wonderful to spend time with you as always, Pascal. Thank you for having me.
Totally. Riaz, let's start with my standard opening question, because I think it's really interesting for me to understand, how do you conceptually think about disruption? What is the mental model you're using?
I think when I think of disruption, I just think of all of the changes that are going on, largely because of technology, but not only. If you look at demographics, that is massively changing the world as well. And all of that means that all of the old business models might not survive all of the disruption we're seeing. So I just see disruption as lots and lots of change, and much more change than we've ever had, and it all happening at the same time, such that the business models really need to change.
As someone who works at a consulting practice, working with clients all over the world who are most likely getting disrupted or being the disruptor, how do you approach this? How do you even start thinking about this?
One of the things is we've got to prepare all of our people in EY to understand how far the world is moving, how fast it's moving, how many things are changing, and to have some models by which they can help their clients through this disruption. So my focus is on how can I help the 350,000 people who work at EY help their clients and in our purpose vision speak, build a better working world, because that's the purpose of the organization. We have a huge number of clients all over the world, and we have a unique access to very, very senior people at these clients. And I take that very seriously, this requirement that our people are as up to date as possible and can advise their clients in the best way.
If you spool back time a little bit and going back 10 years, maybe 20 years, what do you think has changed in terms of how do we approach this? Why is there a necessity for us to do the work you're doing at the moment?
Well, I qualified as a chartered accountant back in 1986. And at that time, the people who were about to retire had basically traded on that same qualification they'd earned 30 or 40 years earlier. And so my model was, yeah, I have to work really hard for 3 years, get this chartered accountancy qualification under my belt, and then I never have to do any more learning again. And that's it. Things won't change. And that was probably true for, 10, 15 years at least. That all changed when the internet and everything came about for middle of the 90s. And that is no longer true. So the useful life of a skill has massively dropped. If I bring that to what we do every day in learning, 10 years ago, we could have designed a course to teach somebody about something, and we would have expected it to last 6 or 7 years. Now, that course only lasts 2 or 3 years because technology or the business models have moved on and we need to refresh.
How do you do this if you are not blessed with the resources of a global organization which has hundreds of thousands of employees? It feels hard to do.
Well, no, actually, I think the internet and technology generally has a real democratizing feature in it. Before Gutenberg, access to literature was only for the really wealthy. So Gutenberg democratized access to literature. The smartphone has democratized access to technology for farmers in Kenya can use it. I think the same's happened in education. In the past, you used to have to get learning from the bagel guy. Mm-hmm. And the bagel guy is the best available guy locally. Right? Now you can get learning from the best available guy or gal globally.
Yeah.
So why learn strategy from your local college's professor when you could learn strategy from Michael Porter? And we have access, the whole world, wherever you, if you're in a village in Bolivia or you're in Manhattan, you have access to the best education in the world simply by going on something like YouTube. So we're already there. We're already there where all of us have got access to so much more knowledge, information, learning than we ever had before.
In that context, and this came up in previous episodes of these conversations we had, this whole notion around reskilling and upskilling and the necessity for it. The two interesting pieces, I believe, which came out of there was is really the question of relevance and scaling. So the idea of how do you actually make sure that your people learn skills which are relevant for their future and not just a, here's a random subscription to an e-learning platform, mm-hmm. which quite frankly, a lot of people and companies do. And then how do you scale this across an organization? How do you approach this? What is your thinking? What's the methodology? What's the way you approach this and what can we learn from there?
So a few years ago, when I returned to the firm after a sabbatical where I built the school in London, I suggested to our CEO that what we needed to do was to focus much more on reskilling because of all the changes, all the disruption going on. He's a new CEO and he was very excited about us upskilling our people anyway. So I had great support directly from the CEO. And what we decided to do was say, what are the skills that all of our people might need in the future, regardless of where they are in the world, how senior they are, or what they do every day. So we curated from MOOCs such as Udemy and Coursera, etc., and some of our own learning, we curated sets of learning that we then put into badges. For example, you can get a learning badge if you do 15 hours of learning about AI. And that learning could come from Udemy, Coursera, EY, whatever, wherever. We help our people rather than saying, hey, go learn about AI, which is useless, really. We say, go do the AI learning badge, learn those 15 hours, and we'll give you a badge. And you can display it on your LinkedIn, and all your friends and your mom can see it and be excited that you've got this badge. And by the way, if you leave EY, it'll stay with you forever in this external backpack together with any other badges you might earn. So that's the learning badge. But actually what we did was we said, it's not enough for people to do 15 hours of learning. They actually need to apply that learning. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is we'll create a bronze badge where they do 15 hours of learning, but they have to do 30 hours of experiences. And then we created a silver one, which is 30 hours of learning and 60 hours of experiences. And then we created a gold one, which said, this isn't about learning anymore. This is about experiences, and this is about you being a renowned expert in this field. And then we created platinum badges to say, you are one of the world's experts. You could talk on any stage about this topic of, cloud computing. You deserve the platinum badge. So that's what we did. And of course, as usual, when you're trying to do something different, you're almost swimming against the tide. You're swimming against all these people who are saying, what are you doing? That's crazy. I remember one of our very senior people telling me, what on earth do we want to give people these silly little girl guides or Boy Scout badges for? And so we did it as an MVP. We did it within 6 months. We launched badges only in data analytics. But we launched them so that anybody in the world could access them. And after 6 months, we had 2,000 badges. And I had a conversation with senior people who said, well, that was kind of a waste of time, wasn't it? And I was talking to them about the law of division of innovation and how this group could actually be the group that kickstarts a big change. And that's exactly what happened. We were helped by COVID. as of today, we've now got 215,000 badges that have been awarded to EY people and another 200,000 in progress as well. We've got badges in 25 different topics, mostly to do with technology, but also to do with leadership and business as well.
What I really love about what you just said, beside the fact that the numbers are staggering, absolutely staggering, is the fact that what sounds to me, you literally sit down with the leadership team, the CEO, and said, what are the skills we actually need? Can you walk me through a little bit, what is the thinking there? How did you identify what are the skills which are needed outside of the classic platitudes of like, yes, more data science?
I don't know, Pascal. I'm not one to be a very, very studious person. I tend to learn by trying things out, trial and error. What we did was we just created a bunch of badges that we thought were the things that people would find useful, where we thought that things are massively changing, and just curated those and then saw what worked and what didn't. And what we found was, for example, at the time, data analytics, data visualization, those badges were the most popular. And then things like AI were popular, but not as popular as data science because those things people could use immediately. And then we spoke to our consultants who are obviously at the cutting edge of this. So we always have some clients who are doing very cutting edge things. Take Microsoft. We're working with them on their royalties that they pay Xbox game producers. And we managed to, using blockchain, reduce the time it takes them to get paid from something like 35 days down to half an hour using blockchain. So that is where we can talk to our consultants who are doing cutting edge things like that and say, okay, what do we need to put into the blockchain badge? What is the content that our people should be learning? What we did was we asked for each badge to have a domain owner who's a specialist in the area. So they're not a learning person, they're a specialist in the area. And we ask them to review all the content every 4 months. So it is a living, breathing set of badges. It's not like we've done it once and that's it, sits on the shelf. And all the time we're creating new badges. We just signed off, created 6 new sustainability badges in December.
That's incredible. Looking at your people, presumably, there's a lot of intrinsic motivation for at least some of them to lean into this, wanting to have their badges, learn. How do you get everybody on the bus, or do you need to get everybody on the bus?
When you're in consulting or doing auditing type work or tax work, as a professional, it's important to develop yourself because the more you develop yourself, the more useful you are with clients and the more the firm benefits. So if you want to get ahead in consulting type businesses, in professional services, developing yourself is a bit like doing R&D. Just like a pharma company has to do R&D, in firms like ours, we have to do people development because we don't have any products to sell. We only sell what's in the minds of our people and how they behave. And that's what we're trying to influence. So that's why people tend to want to do these things. But of course, they want to know, well, if I get this, what will change? If I get this badge, will anything change for me? We spend a lot of time talking about that. How can we let them know that what they've learned is going to be useful in the future? How can we say, actually, here's an example of somebody who did this badge, and as a result, they moved into a new line of business and were able to work with different clients and do something different? Or this person did all of these badges and is now famous within this unit. I was just talking to our German business. So they're famous within Stuttgart because they've done all these badges. Being well-known is another factor in why people succeed in professional services. So this, using badges, you can stand out a little bit more. What we then did actually was we said, if you collect a certain number of badges across technology, leadership, and business, then you're more than halfway towards a real fully accredited MBA. Launching that really increased the number of badges people wanted. I mean, we always had leadership badges as well as technology ones because I firmly believe that the future is about having not only the right tech skill set, but also the right leadership mindset. Within the leadership badges, there are things like the curiosity badge. Mm-hmm. If you do 4 years of learning at a degree in AI, by year four, I'm pretty certain a lot of what you learned in year one is out of date. Mm-hmm. So what you need is the mindset of curiosity if you're really going to keep up that learning and make it useful, make it lifelong learning. So we think it's about skill set and mindset together. When we launched these, the MBA made us add the business badges in strategy, finance, etc., because it's a real fully accredited MBA. So you get badges in the three areas. You do a group challenge project, and then you do a capstone project, and that's how you get your MBA.
First of all, I think this is incredible. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I've actually met a few of your MBA candidates who then went on to celebrate having received their fully accredited MBA while being on a job and effectively for free. Right?
Like absolutely. Yeah. We've just had our 55th graduate. That's for the first three cohorts. And cohort four, which has just started, will have 66 graduates. So it's been exponential. It's doubled, more than doubled each time. Each cohort was more than doubled. I think within a couple of years, we'll be looking at 500 graduates a year.
That's amazing.
For free.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Which then, of course, also becomes, I'm pretty sure, a good recruiting tool in the market, right?
No other organization in the world is offering a completely free MBA, fully accredited, to all of its people worldwide, no matter what they do, where they are. And as a recruitment tool, you know, that's pretty exciting. As you say, if you've done, let's say, three quarters of the badges, you're not going to leave the firm, are you? You're going to stay around and finish those badges. So it acts as a retention tool as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Something you just said, I would love to double click on, which is the leadership component. So we hear a lot about the soft skills are becoming more important than ever. And arguably, you hear a lot of platitudes around those, right? Like, oh, you need to have empathy. I'm curious, as you're thinking about leadership skills, what do you see as the most important, most relevant skills we actually need to imbue in our people and probably like either rekindle, strengthen, or actually create?
Absolutely. Well, as you would expect for a consulting firm, we have a framework around this. We call it the UI Transformative Leadership Framework. And at the heart of it is a yellow heart. Yellow is the EY color. It's full of brightness and positivity for the future. And the yellow heart in the middle says your purpose, because we want every single person in EY to figure out what their life's purpose is. And if they can then connect that purpose to building a better working world, our corporate purpose, then all the better. But we actually spend time, and we have a badge called My Purpose. We want people to spend time understanding why they exist on this earth. Around My Purpose is then Better Me, because we think once you've figured out your purpose, it's really important to focus on yourself. And three things in particular. One is curiosity, as I said. Mm-hmm. Another one is wellness, particularly important right now, although we did this framework 4 years ago. And then agility. Because whatever job you're doing today won't be the job you're doing in 5 years' time, no matter what you're doing. So you start with purpose, then you have Better Me. And then on the outskirt of that, you then have Better Us. So it's like, okay, you've focused on yourself. Now focus on your team. How can you inspire them? How can you make them feel that they belong? And how can you team well across the firm, across the world? And then the final outer ring is called Better Working World, which is how do we make the world better for our clients and our communities and our owners, our shareholders, effectively. So that's the EY leadership framework, and we have badges for every element of that. That's how you get your MBA. You have to get all the badges and all of those things.
I love how you're putting the individual and its purpose into the center. In a lot of ways, the Simon Sinek start with why mentality of really starting out with the why, and then the how will and the what will basically emerge from there.
Exactly.
One thing we hear a lot of people talk about is culture, right? Like this necessity of like changing your culture, becoming more whatever terms we're using, all the way to I want to be like Google, whatever that actually even means. One thing we observed is that once you start in earnest on a learning path, by rolling out relevant learning at scale, you actually shift culture inside of your organization. And I'm curious if you're seeing something like this with the programs you're running, given how widely spread they're now inside of the organization. Are you seeing shifting culture due to the learning?
Well, we certainly wanted to see that shift in culture. We wanted our business. We have 13,000 partners and 350,000 people, staff. So we wanted, particularly the partners, to be supportive of this change of figure of people spending time on learning, on this focus on lifelong learning. We want to be a learning culture. So how do you do that? Well, one, you, I think, in the way we've done it, is you allow people access to learning, not the learning they need for, you know, doing an audit or doing some tax work. We do plenty of that learning. Every person on average in EY gets 60 hours of learning a year. So we do plenty of that. This is on top. This is the learning you need just to be a great professional of the future. The learning around tech, the learning around leadership and business. And it's entirely optional. One, you make it available to everybody, but you've got to change the leadership as well. So, Pascal, you're very aware of what we've started to do with our partners. We created an entire set of programs for our senior people, programs on transformative leadership, programs on disruptive tech that you're part of, programs on client centricity, how to build relationships with clients better, on strategic conversations, how to have them at the boardroom. And the new one we're just developing is sustainability and ESG series. So these series are basically two-hour sessions that partners can log into if they do the full series of five or so modules. We give them an EY badge, which they then display on their signature, onto LinkedIn, and basically encourage everybody else to get a badge. So we did that as an experiment again, didn't really know what we were doing, just tried it. And so far in the last 18 months, 9,000 of our 13,000 partners have got a badge in one of our programs. Now, I think, and I just met somebody in the call just before this one who said, oh, I just did that program and it was amazing. And I've told all my friends that they've got to do it as well. And so we're kind of creating this culture that if we can get partners excited about learning, then it's okay for their people to be excited about learning, and the whole organization then starts to shift.
I love how you're thinking about the trickle-down effect from leadership, and I couldn't agree more. There's a beautiful German saying, which has like absolutely no translation into any other language, which is the fish stinks from Kopf, the fish stinks from the head, or rots from the head, for whatever reason. Right. Apparently that's a thing.
What is the German word? There must be a single German word for that.
No, there's. It's a very short German sentence, actually. Der Fisch stinkt vom Kopf. But it's a beautiful image. It's a smelly image, but it is a very memorable image, I think. How do you think about this? So you're doing this inside of the firm, of course. How do you think about this for your clients? How do you think about this for like all these incumbent organizations? Because they're facing the same issues. And what do you tell them?
Well, when we launched the EY Tech MBA, there was a single article in the Wall Street Journal, and suddenly I had a bunch of CHROs and CEOs calling me and asking how we did it. We do people consulting. We help clients. Within EY, we help clients upskill. We created a business unit called Skills Foundry. And in Skills Foundry, we are currently working with a large number of global clients, helping them figure out what is their version of EY badges and EY degrees and upskilling, etc. So we're doing this for our clients at the total organization level. But I also think, and I learned this from you, that there's a large number of executives out there who think they'd understand technology and its impacts, and they really don't. And so I saw this need for us to create something in Silicon Valley where we can give people a week-long experience of what is happening in the world of tech, what are companies doing to respond, and what are you going to do? And so they walk away with an actual action plan or a prioritized list of areas to look at as they leave that week. In order to do that, we thought it was important for our own senior client handlers to also get that experience. What is going on in the world? How are companies dealing with it? How can you help your clients through this? So we've created this site in Palo Alto called the EY Tech University to do precisely this, to upskill our senior partners and then have them talk to our big global clients and say, why don't you come and spend a week with us and we will help you figure this out and get clarity across your senior leadership team as to what's really important.
How important do you think the learning and development component or the reskilling and upskilling component is to it? Is it paramount? Is it tangential? Is it something you have to do first or you have to do later?
I don't know. I think maybe it depends on sector, Pascal, depending on how much is going on in your sector, how much disruption is really, really going on. There are certain sectors like food where the disruption will happen, but maybe a little later than something like, I don't know, car manufacturing. So I think the upskilling we're talking about depends on the sector, but also depends on the job that the people are doing and the jobs that need to be done in the future. And I think it's really important as an organization to say, what are the skills of the people today? What are the skills going to be needed in the future given the job to be done? How will those skills change? And how do we upskill? So it's a difficult question to answer across sectors. Mm-hmm. And in its entirety, I think the answer is it depends, which is... Seems somewhat unsatisfactory.
Perfectly fine. Let me, for the last few minutes of our conversation, I would love to kind of change tack a little bit because I do want to talk about your work you do with youth, One Degree Academy and a bunch of other work you're doing. I get asked this question consistently, and I'm pretty sure you get the same question, which is, what do we need to teach our kids? How do we make them future-proof? How do we make them successful in the future? What does this mean for the current education system? And clearly, you have been someone who is not just talking about this or thinking about it. You actually have put this into action by creating a chartered school. So what do we need to teach kids today? And how does this fit into the existing education system?
Our school in North London is in a very disadvantaged area. 80% of our kids are in the bottom decile of earnings in the UK. We've been thinking what we wanted to do in creating this school is to have the outcomes that a private school has, but with public school money, with state money. And we think a lot of what is wrong with education today is not only the content of what kids are learning, but more importantly, the values and the character that we of the kids that we're creating. And a lot of that comes from the teachers. So we started off by having a clear vision that what we wanted to do was take the poorest kids and have almost all of them, 100% of them, being able to choose whether or not to go to a top university at the end of their time with us. We decided to look at the teachers that we had and said, we need to recruit people who are very different than the typical teacher. We need to recruit teachers who are lifelong learners in themselves. And we need to treat teachers in a very different way. So, for example, my principal spends time with every single teacher on a Friday saying, what is the one thing that you want to improve next week? Just the one thing. And what we do is we examine the teacher, observe the teacher during the week and see them try different things. And at the end of the week, we say, how did you do? What did you try? What worked? What didn't? What's the one thing you want to improve next week? And, you know, our school's called One Degree, meaning one degree at a time, you change the world. And effectively, we're doing that with our teachers as well. So it starts with teacher development as well. But really, with what we're teaching the kids is clearly core knowledge is important. You know, you can't have a kid coming out of school not knowing how to add up, like you're not knowing basic maths or not being able to read or whatever. So we think core knowledge is important. But the problem with knowledge is a lot of the knowledge is going to be readily available to these kids. I mean, it's readily available to us now. You want to know what the capital of Outer Mongolia is, you can find out that it's Outer Ulaanbaatar from Google in a few seconds. So it's not really about knowledge. It's really about giving them this love of learning. We focus on a bunch of values, and those values build character. So we look at values like scholarship, teamwork, taking responsibility. Yeah, as a four-year-old, we want you to take responsibility, integrity, how you add value, and how much effort you put in. They all spell out the word strive. So we want you to strive one degree at a time for excellence. There's a bunch of things we do. Every single day, we give out at least three tickets for people who have shown exemplary examples of following our values. So we will make a five-year-old stand up and say, this five-year-old, we're going to give a ticket for integrity because he found a pound coin on the floor and handed it to the teacher. That showed integrity. The whole school will turn around, look at that kid, and 3, 2, 1, we will give him a whoosh. So you get 200 kids looking at you, all giving you a whoosh straight to your face. As a five-year-old, that changes something inside you. That gives you that dopamine hit, and it links it to you doing something good. There's a bunch of other things we do, but it's things like that's just an example of how we want to build the right character. We also need to give poor kids cultural capital, because unlike people like you and me, they don't have or didn't have an uncle who was an accountant or a father who was a doctor or whatever. So we get people like you, Pascal, coming and talking to the kids and telling your story, which means over the lifetime of the school, they'll meet 400 people and at least one of them will inspire them. So it's things like that. We've connected with a bunch of schools, not only in the UK, external, outside of the UK as well, to say, let's share our learnings in doing some of these innovative things, because we want to keep learning as a school as well. We did all this, and after 3 years, every 3 years, UK schools have to be inspected. The government inspected us, and we were one of the very, very few schools to get rated outstanding in our very first inspection. So the principal's just incredible, done an amazing job.
That is amazing. And there's so much more we can get into, and I would love to get into. In the interest of time, let me put a bow on this. I loved your comment around the love for learning. And you said this in the context of One Degree Academy. I believe it's very, very true. Clearly, it comes across too in your work at EY. And for the people over at EY, we talked about curiosity, which love for learning. I think those two things come close together. Riaz, I love the conversation. Super insightful. Lots and lots and lots of stuff to take away. I think for everybody who's listening to this, really think about reskilling and upskilling, not as a necessity you have to do, because yes, you have to do it, but it is a huge opportunity. And I think it's also what came out of the conversation for me here is be really thoughtful about this. This is not something you outsource to your HR department and let them come up with a program, but it's something you want to be intentional about, because then you really create and reap the benefits from it. So Riaz, thank you so much. This was amazing.
Wonderful to spend the time with you. Thank you, Pascal. See you again.
Hey, it's Pascal. Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Disrupt Disruption. If you want more, check out the other episodes we have on this podcast. And if you liked it, do us a favor. Go on your podcasting platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, whatever it is, and leave a quick review. It helps tremendously with getting the insights from our guests out into the world. If you have any questions, send me an email. You can reach me at pascal@finet.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I will hear you here soon.